The first reading is found on page 678 of the Church Bibles, Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verses 9 to 12, verse 8. You who are young, be happy while you are young, and let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart, and whatever your eyes see, but know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. So then, banish anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body, for youth and vigour are meaningless. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach, when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after the rain. When the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those looking through the windows grow dim, when the doors to the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades, when people rise up at the sound of birds, but all their songs grow faint, when people are afraid of heights and of dangers in the streets, when the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper drags itself along and desire no longer is stirred, then people go to their eternal home and mourners go about the streets. Remember him before the silver cord is severed and the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring and the wheel broken at the well, and the dust returns to the ground it came from and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, everything is meaningless. And the second reading is 2 Corinthians 4, page 1161. Starting at verse 16. Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. For we know that if the earthly tent we live in is destroyed, we have a building from God, an eternal house in heaven, not built by human hands. Meanwhile we groan, longing to be clothed instead with our heavenly dwelling, because when we are clothed, we will not be found naked. For while we are in this tent, we groan and are burdened, because we do not wish to be unclothed, but to be clothed instead with our heavenly dwelling, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life. Now the one who has fashioned us for this very purpose is God, who has given us the Spirit as a deposit, guaranteeing what is to come.
Well, thank you very much, Amy. Well done for braving it through the snow. And a particular welcome to you if you are new to City. If you're here partly as a result of that poll that we held over the Christmas time services that we had, where we invited you to answer the question, what do you think has the greatest power to make us happy? I think about 700 different people put their token in one of the boxes, gave their votes to the answer. And as Dan has already said, this is week three in the series. We've already tried to interact a little bit from a Christian perspective with the first two most popular answers. And the first most popular answer in terms of what we think might make us happy is if we could change the world for the better. And we saw that within us seems to be this desire to make our lives meaningful, that happiness comes from purpose and meaning, that maybe we can find purpose and meaning in improving the world. And we interacted and thought a little bit about that. And you can listen in to that talk online if you'd like to via the City Church website. Then last week we looked at the second most popular answer. And that was not changing the world for the better, but the second popular answer was, well, maybe a fulfilling relationship might make me happy. And again, we thought about that last Sunday. Listen in to those online if you're interested. Today is the third and final week. And we're looking at the answer that was just behind those two, which was maybe good health is the key to happiness. As we've looked through this series, we've seen two things that every human being feels instinctively and feels deeply. The first one is this, We desire to be happy. Every human being has within them that desire to find a deep happiness. The French philosopher and mathematician Blaise Pascal suggested that finally, even those who consider suicide only do so from a quest for happiness, that they find life so miserable that maybe they'd be happier if they didn't exist than if they did. So we all desire to be happy. The second thing that we've also observed that we can't help but notice is that although we want to be happy, we find happiness a really difficult thing to hold on to. We stumble across it occasionally, but staying happy is an altogether different thing. Feelings of contentment and satisfaction, well, they rise and they fall and they come and they go. And in each of the last 2 weeks, we've considered something of the Christian response to this tension. We want to be happy, but yet we find happiness so hard to hold on to. And we've suggested that maybe that frustration is part of God's actual design. That God, in a way, has subjected the world and we as human beings who live in it to that sense of frustration. That we can't experience or have a sense of heaven here on earth. And maybe that frustration is to point us away from thinking we can find final fulfillment in this world, and to the idea that maybe happiness lies beyond this world, essentially. In his book, Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis argues exactly that point. He said, "If I find in myself desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. If none of my earthly pleasures satisfy it, that does not prove that the universe is a fraud. Probably earthly pleasures were never meant to satisfy it, but only to arouse it, to suggest the real thing. If that is so, I must take care on the one hand never to despise or to be unthankful for these earthly blessings, and on the other hand, never to mistake them for the something else of which they are only a kind of copy or echo or mirage. I must keep alive in myself the desire for my true country, which I shall not find till after death. I must never let it get snowed under or turned aside. I must make it the main object of life, to press on to that country and to help others to do the same." Why do we desire happiness and struggle to find it? C.S. Lewis says, because happiness finally lies in God's new creation, in a life that is made new in Jesus Christ, that takes us beyond this world and into the next. That God, in our frustrations at a lack of happiness and meaning and satisfaction in life, is pushing and pointing us towards that. Well, in our final sermon, we're going to look at this answer of good health. And I think we're going to see the same dynamic at work of a sense of, yes, we know something of that reality, and yet finally, we can't satisfy it now, and it's pushing us beyond this world and into the next. So firstly, the desire for good health. What part does good health play in our happiness? Well, the Journal of Happiness Studies. Now, believe, there really is a Journal of Happiness Studies. Points to the idea that all the evidence suggests that, and I quote, "health status is one of the most important predictors of happiness." Interestingly, there seems to be a reciprocal relationship between health and happiness. They reinforce each other as a circle. Not only does good health make us happy, but being happy keeps you healthy. One really fascinating study I came across as I was reading for this considered the lives of 700 Hollywood actors. Those who had won an Oscar, on average, lived 4 years longer than those who were merely nominated for an Oscar but failed to win it. Happiness and health reinforce each other. Well, that's not the focus particularly of our study, but I did find that interesting. Maybe health and happiness do kind of go together. And that shouldn't surprise us because of what we read in Ecclesiastes. We're not going to study that passage today. We looked at the book of Ecclesiastes not many months ago, just over a year or so ago, and you can find all of them on the website. And I think a lot of people connect with the book of Ecclesiastes because it gives expression to this desire for satisfaction and meaning and happiness. You might say it's a meditation on happiness. That's what the whole book is about in one sense. So do read it in your own time. But do you remember where our passage started this morning? Should come up on our screen. You who are young, be happy while you are young. And let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. It is sometimes, rightly said, that youth is wasted on the young. I guess you don't really know what you've got until it's taken away. Those of us for whom youth is a distant memory say, along with the author of Ecclesiastes, to you who are young, you don't know how blessed you are to enjoy and take for granted good health, to be guaranteed a good night's sleep when your head hits the pillow. As I tried to play football against students half my age yesterday afternoon at the student weekend, I felt something of that frustration as they left me for dead time and again on the pitch. Just think about what it is to be young. You don't have those wearisome responsibilities. Your bodies are strong. You've got energy for each day. There's a passion and a zeal that remains undaunted even by setbacks. And above all else, of course, you have time and dreams and hopes. So the writer of Ecclesiastes says, if you're young, well, be glad and enjoy your youth. And then he goes on in chapter 12 and verse 1 and says to us, remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you say, I find no pleasure in them. Remember the Creator in the days of your youth. So as we think about this issue of good health and happiness, well, the author of Ecclesiastes says, yeah, they kind of do go together, don't they? When you're young and you have energy and desire and health, enjoy them, and you will. But the writer to the Ecclesiastes there reminds us that, of course, those days will go. There will be an end to good health. The years will come when they will end. And as we age, we start to feel its impact, not just on our bodies, but on our sense of happiness and health and well-being. One journalist writing in Cosmopolitan magazine said, the older I get, the more intensely I feel like the world is asking me to disappear. In the last few years of dating, she says, I feel like a can on a shelf whose sell-by date has passed. Well, how should we react to aging and to ill health? Well, if God has made our experience of life frustrating for a purpose, well, can I ask you, what is your body trying to tell you? Maybe just at the moment your body's trying to tell you it's hungry. Your body's telling you right now you need to go to bed a little bit earlier this evening. Our bodies are constantly speaking to us in one way or another. But what your body is telling you sooner or later is that you're wearing out. And sooner or later, you will waste away. Whether it's the first time you ever have to have a tooth filled by the dentist, or you spot the first grey hair, or the wrinkles on the face. Now I sigh every time I drop a teaspoon, because I think it's a long way down and a long way back up again. And our culture says, shh, silence the foolish talk of your body. Go into denial, stop the aging process. I'm not sure what lotions and potions you apply every night. Here's one you might want to try. Revlon, age-defying with DNA advantage. What on earth is that? I have no idea. DNA advantage built into your healthcare product. Well, maybe it will offer a little bit of help. a little bit of resistance to the inevitable. Our culture says you can go into some kind of denial. Don't listen to your body. But the Apostle Paul, in that second reading that we had, has an altogether different perspective. Would you turn back there to page 1161? Page 1161. If you're using a church Bible, of course, and to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Let me read again verses 16 to 18 there. Therefore, we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away. Yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day, for our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Now, Paul, writing in the context of this letter, is actually probably talking about his sufferings for being a Christian and speaking of Jesus around the world and taking the good news of Jesus to people who, well, resisted him and fought him over it. But the principles in this passage, I think, apply just as much to any of us who experience something of the wasting away of our bodies. But Paul says, do you notice there in verse 16, is not a reason to despair when your hair starts falling out or you can't run as you used to run. We don't lose heart. Even though we can see, we can't do the things that we used to do. Why? Well, look at verse 17. He says, our troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory. In other words, one of the big things that the Christian will claim is that God can have a purpose in suffering, that they provoke us to think about our lives, and that they push us to a hope that lies beyond this world. You see verse 17, our troubles are achieving something for us. Poor health, growing old, has a purpose. I visited the site deathclock.com and entered my vital statistics, and I was reliably informed that I would die on the 11th of May, 2066. Seemed a little bit generous, actually, so I just thought, I'm just going to try that again, just to be sure. And second time around, just 2 minutes later, 10 years had been knocked off my life, and I was now going to die on May the 8th, 2056. So I thought, I'm not going to try that again in case I get an even worse result. But you don't need deathclock.com to tell you the one thing you can know for sure. And that is, we are outwardly wasting away, to use Paul's language here. Whoever we are, time will in the end have its way with our bodies. And whatever happiness and contentment we get from good health, just as the writer to Ecclesiastes encouraged us to, whatever health, happiness, contentment we find, we know that it will come to an end. And God is telling you something when you find that health and happiness come and go. He's finding a way to communicate with you that your ultimate happiness cannot be found in this body and in this life. And if you're a Christian, you know that your hope is that through Jesus Christ and his death on a cross for our sin and his resurrection to life, never to die again, that the hope that is held out for you is that you can share in his immortality. We do not lose heart. It is possible in this life to have a deeper sense of contentment, even when facing suffering, if you believe that God will take you to be with him and be with him forever. Paul Calanthe was a brilliant neurosurgeon whose life was tragically cut short by cancer at the age of 37. Just listen to his educational background. He held degrees in English literature and human biology from Stanford, a master's in philosophy of science at Cambridge, all before going on to study and complete medicine at Yale, Stanford, Cambridge, and Yale, 4 degrees. In his final few months of life, he wrote what became his best-selling memoir, When Breath Becomes Air. And this is what he had to say when he received a terminal diagnosis that he knew meant his time was so short. He said, "The problem with atheism eventually became evident. To make science the arbiter of metaphysics is to banish not only God from the world, but also love, hate, and meaning. Atheism asks us to consider a world that is self-evidently not the world we live in." And he goes on to say, "I return to the central values of Christianity, sacrifice, redemption, forgiveness, because I found them so compelling." He described his atheism as ironclad. That's how he described his atheism. And then he became very unwell, and he faced his own mortality. And he said, "What answers can atheism bring in the face of death?" None. It was just a void. It was just a blank. And he said he went on a journey which returned him home. "I returned to the central values of Christianity because I found them so compelling." In other words, it took the taking away of his own health for him to see where it was all pointing and where life was ultimately taking him. A terminal diagnosis, no less, to bring clarity, to bring focus to life. In the face of his suffering, he realized his atheism made no sense. And it takes you back to that C.S. Lewis quote, doesn't it? "If I find in myself desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world." And that's what Calanthe discovered. So yes, enjoy health while we have it, and it will to a degree make you happy. But then the Apostle Paul says here in 2 Corinthians, recognize that you will waste away, and you're going to need a happiness that can see you through that and beyond this life. And Paul in chapter 5 of 2 Corinthians is going to take us to what I've put under the heading of our third heading, the promise of good life. The truly good news of the gospel is that a day is coming when the desire to be truly happy will be fulfilled, a day when God will make all things new. Look at chapter 5 and verse 2. "Meanwhile, we groan." But Christians groan under the aches and pains of life because we long to be clothed instead with our heavenly dwelling. That's the future. Verse 1, "We know that if the earthly tent that we live in, our bodies, is destroyed, we have a building from God, an eternal house in heaven." God has already given us, in the death of Jesus and the resurrection of Jesus, a signal of what he plans and intends for us. And that means our failing bodies aren't a reason to despair, because we have eternal life that transcends this world. We long to be clothed with our heavenly dwelling. This is what Paul Tripp has to say. He says, "God intends that waiting would make me long for home. When I consider this, I'm often reminded of camping." I hate camping, by the way, so I love this quote. He says, "I suppose the whole purpose of camping is to make you thankful for home. When you camp, everything is more difficult than it would be at home. In the beginning, that can be fun." I doubt that. "But for 3 or 4 days, you begin to get tired of having to make a fire." I mean, he's serious, hardcore camper, clearly. "You begin to get tired of having to make a fire, having to hunt for drinkable water, having to fish for supper. You quietly, or not so quietly, begin to long for home." Tenting maybe is fun for a few days, but you want to get home to a roaring fire and all the creature comforts. And what does Paul say now about life now? Well, he says it's like living in a tent. And the best you can do with your bodies, even with Revlon age-defying DNA advancing, whatever, all you're doing is putting another patch on the tent just to stop the water coming through. What you really want is to get home, have a shower, enjoy some hot food, put the telly on. And so we wait to be clothed with immortality. We wait for a heavenly body. For while we are in this tent, verse 4, we groan and are burdened, because we do not wish to be unclothed, but to be clothed instead with our heavenly dwelling, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life. Because mortality brings a focus to our lives, it actually helps us to find Jesus Christ, and in him, a peace and happiness and contentment that is ours not just for this life, but for eternity. C.H. Spurgeon said, "Never fear dying, beloved. Dying is the last, but the least matter that a Christian has to be anxious about. Because through our deaths, God will take us home. Are you afraid to die?" Now, of course, we're all troubled by the thoughts of the pain that that might involve. But I mean, are you afraid that your life might be cut short in some way and that you might miss out? Well, for those of us who fear missing out on life, Paul is saying to us in here, don't fear, but find your happiness in God. Verse 6, we know that as long as we're at home in the body, we're away from the Lord. So if God uses suffering in our lives, if he takes away our health, and if in turn our desire to be with the Lord grows, then that's something to be thankful for. Verse 8, Paul goes on to say, I would actually prefer to be away from the body and at home with the Lord. And again, poor health only enforces and reinforces that view. Don't be surprised if God may allow you to experience weakness to remind you where your true home is. So let God be your greatest hope. And whatever reason that you have for thinking that you might actually want to stay in this world, well, actually, the future is so much better than this world that even everything that we long for in this life will only be bettered by the world that God has promised. Augustine said, "Let our God be our hope. He who made all things is better than all things. He who has made beautiful things is more beautiful than all things. He who has made what is mighty is mightier, and he who has made what is great is greater. Whatever you have loved, he will be that for you. Learn to love the Creator in the creature, the Maker in what is made, lest you grasp what he has made and lose him by whom you too have been made." We can love the world so much that we lose sight of the Maker of the world, and we lose everything finally on that day of judgment. But maybe our suffering will focus our thoughts on him who is greater than the world. Augustine is saying, essentially, with God, the best is yet to come. Many of us, and I'll close with this story, many of us remember a young woman in our church called Fiona. She had a wasting disease that was similar to that of Stephen Hawking. And when she came to church, she came in something that was more of a bed than it was a wheelchair. She couldn't really see. She had no control over her limbs or her body, really only her head, and that was a frustration as well. She couldn't really see. She found that her hearing was going as well. Outside, it was pitiful, really. No one would ever want to have exchanged places with her. She was wasting away in a very real way. But whether at church on a Sunday or at home group in the week, she was inwardly being renewed. About a year before she died, she gave her testimony at the front of the church. She struggled, actually, just even to breathe, to speak, to give answers. And she confessed that life was far from easy. But she said one of the most profound and striking things that I think has ever been said from the front at City Church, and it was this. She said, I would rather be in this wheelchair and know Jesus than be able-bodied and not know Jesus. She did not lose heart, even though she didn't enjoy ever a moment of good health. And when we asked her what were the things that she really looked forward to in life, for her it was the eternal glory that Paul speaks of in this passage. And to a time when once again, she might, as she did when she was a little girl, be able to run and be able to skip and be able to dance. Fiona's suffering caused her to fix her eyes on what is unseen. Her troubles achieved in her a longing for something that she knew she would never have in this world, which was to be at home with Jesus Christ forever. Let's pray. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Father in heaven, thank you for the good health that we enjoy as long as we have it. In the days of our youth, may we rejoice in all that we can do and achieve and do in your name and for your sake. And yet we recognize that we are those who will outwardly waste away, and we ask and pray that by your Spirit you would point us to our heavenly home, that you would increase our longing for a world made new where we will be truly happy with you forever. And we dare to pray that you might be ready to use whatever it would take to increase that appetite for glory, to help us to fix our eyes on what we as yet do not see. And we ask this in Jesus' precious name. Amen.